Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's always thrown together at the last minute, kind of like Middle Eastern country invasion plans that are just like either a month too late or there's just no weapons of mass destruction, you know, it's just madness. And my very special guests to help us through this madness are two American Freedom Radio show hosts. We have Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello.
And we have Alex and Siri from Outside the Box. Alex, welcome.
Hello, Vinny. Hello, Susan. Hello, American Freedom Radio.
You know, it's about Christmas time. I was wondering what you guys are wishing Santa would put in your stocking. Is it depleted uranium, chemtrail composites, what? Nobody want to take that?
That's a really good question. I'm going to have to think about that some more. But I just sometimes pray for just a normal, sane world in a very insane universe. Moment to moment, so yeah, as soon as the universe can deliver that Christmas wish that I've had the last couple of years to live in a sane world, hey, I'm ready to receive. Other than material things, you know, I just hope that it's going to be a good holiday for everybody, especially people and their relationships with family, that where there's hurt feelings, that we can work through some of those hurt feelings and get through these holidays.
You know, my sister got very angry at Sarah yesterday because she said that Christmas is just for kids. And my sister's point is that Christmas is actually very much for adults because it's actually quite rare that we get to be around our families and do that kind of close contact, sharing a meal and what have you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we should be doing. We should be spending time with our families and our loved ones. And stay away from all of the consumer debt slaves and just have a good time and enjoy each other.
You know, it'd be great if we gave somebody a present, all right? Let's say your sibling is a consumer debt slave. Why don't you buy them a t-shirt that says consumer debt slave, you know, in white stencil on black t-shirt? I reckon it'd go down a treat.
Now that they're outlawing feeding the homeless, everyone get an extra loaf of bread, some extra meat, some cheese, or whatever, peanut butter and jelly. Make sandwiches and hand them out to everyone that is homeless. Just keep them in your car, you know, rotate them. But, you know, keep them handy and just keep handing them out. Because, you know, I think we should help also other people. And screw the municipalities and the local governments that think that we shouldn't be helping each other because we're not a certified kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. I also thought about runaway protesting. You know, you could just, I don't know, turn up somewhere with a megaphone or what have you and bullhorn like a consulate office or something of that nature. And then when the cops arrive, you change into a Santa suit and you just kind of like stand down on the corner or whatever, ringing a bell, going, oh, Merry Christmas, and start collecting donations and what have you. You know, they'll be none the wiser.
Maybe we could have like a Christmas conspiracy theory parade, and instead of all that crap that they have like at the Macy's Day Parade, you could just tell people the truth. Maybe have singing and dancing along with it.
Get your conspiracy this Christmas.
What happens when you change the lettering around on Santa? You get Satan. You get materialization. And I just want to add to what Susan was saying. How about some civil disobedience along those lines of helping other people? Many of us understand and respect those that engage in civil disobedience relating to the Second Amendment. And that's all fine and great. But what about going deeper into community issues and bring the civil disobedience into that, at where we converge on these cities where they're enforcing some of these draconian laws, immoral laws?
I think the great Howard Zinn said, our problem is not civil disobedience. Our problem is civil obedience. And just recently, I think last week or might have been the week before, Matt Damon himself echoed those exact same words. Now, I mean, come on. If Matt Damon can come out and say that we need to be civilly disobedient, I think Santa would be right behind it too, apart from the fact that he was created entirely by the Coca-Cola Corporation.
That is a book that everyone should have in their library, The People's History of the United States of America by Howard Zinn. That is a definite, you have to have that in your library and physically have it. Appreciate the, you know, the physicality of the paper and turning the pages. That book is filled with incredible information from eyewitness accounts who didn't make it into the indoctrination station history books or even, you know, the popular Borders and Barnes & Noble bookstore history section, because they just don't want you to understand what actually happened to create the situation that we're in today.
Because, yeah, and you'd probably prevent similar types of discrimination happening against other people. Speaking of giving the gift of conspiracy this Christmas, the realization dawned on me that conspiracy theorists are now the most discriminated group of people, just in general, around the world. No.
Are we a minority?
Well, just think about this. Think about this. All right. You know, people say that women are discriminated against. Okay. Try introducing yourself to a group of strangers as a woman. Hello, I'm a woman. And they go, okay, whatever. You come and introduce yourself. Hello, I'm a conspiracy theorist. You just watch them back away slowly. You know,
right?
Or start insulting you or something like that. You know, and it's. Like, it's not like as hardcore as, say, racism was or whatever. It's even worse because it's just straight up in your face and everybody thinks it's socially acceptable to abuse a conspiracy theorist. There's people who find it socially acceptable to even hit you if you come up with something that controverts their facts. They get really, really angry. Are we the, like, we're like the new abused minority, man, and we didn't even realize it until now.
You know, I have a lot to say about that. Go ahead, Susan.
I know. I was thinking, you know, 30 years down the road, are they going to say, oh, geez, it was so terrible that we were so mean to the conspiracy theorists because they were right. We should have listened instead of stoning them. Oh, darn.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And but yet, after all these years, I've never really, very rarely do I get an email from someone that thought in 2005 I was a conspiracy kook for talking about Big Brother when I got involved in activism in Portland, Oregon. I've never heard from people years ago that used to call in and prank my show and call me a weirdo. I've never heard from them. And now we live in that Big Brother reality where Amazon's going to be bringing us our packages, our dildos, via drones. So I hope that's so much, Susan, but I'm not going to hold my breath. But let me say this briefly. If I'm with someone and I care about their status or I don't want them to be marginalized, I tell them, be careful what you tell people about me. Even though you may respect me and you may see the value in me, the world doesn't see necessarily independent journalists that operate outside not just mainstream media, but paid media, actually working for a print media organization. And I just tell people, use discretion when you introduce me, because they may hold it against you when I give them my website.
And all the information is now being collected on people. I'm feeling rather exhausted today because I got to bed at 5:30 a.m. I was up all night editing this Take Back Your Power seminar about smart meters and all the surveillance technology and everything that they've got now. And, oh boy. Did you know that Google's now treating people who want to go off-grid as suspicious? Like, you know, you don't have a Facebook, you don't have a website, you don't have this, that, the other. Oh, why? Why? They got real weird stuff too, man. Like, all of your appliances are going to be, like, smart appliances. You know the technology, that wireless technology that allows you to, like, change the channel on your brand new flashy TV just by waving your hands at it or something? It means that there's a wireless transmitter in your house that's connected to the internet that is watching you move. They got little robotic vacuum cleaners, okay, that you can plug into with your smartphone. It's got a little onboard camera. So, you know, your alarm goes off at home, and you can just plug into your camera just to see whether or not it's a spider crawling and over the sensor on the alarm or something like that, you know. And they can even have an attachment where you can give them a taser gun. A vacuum cleaner with a taser gun, okay? It is the home appliance that cleans up dirt and cleans up crime at the same time.
They have RFID chips on diapers to monitor your child's health. It analyzes the contents of the diapers.
They have smart pajamas for your kids. I don't know, seriously. Like, pajamas connected to a smartphone, so if your kid gets upset or something like that, the smartphone will turn on right next to its head and play it like really nice Beethoven music or something to soothe it to sleep.
They've got checkpoints now where you have to show your ID, and they're randomly asking for people's ID on Facebook. They're not doing it all at once because they don't have the staff to do it. But I got my notification 2 weeks ago. So for those that want to stay connected with other people, unless you develop a backup form and you don't plan to show your ID, there's a day where that cyber checkpoint is going to knock at the door and you won't be able to get back in.
You mean your driver's license?
Your driver's license. I was asked last week for my identification to get on Facebook. Now, because I am Alex Ansari, and I only, you know, it's a Texas ID. I don't even live in Texas anymore. Look, all right, fine, there's my ID. What are you going to do? But for a lot of other people, I know they're not going to do that. And I'd like to see people maintain their connections. I'd like to see Susan Polzel with a cool forum, too. Let's all start looking at social media forums off of Facebook, because they're coming for us. And a big way they can disconnect the information that we're sharing is to make sure we're not on their platform. That's what I'm concerned about. YouTube as well.
Well, yeah, they're using all of the copyright infringement to take down massive amounts of information, including when people are filming the police. Mm-hmm. They take those YouTube videos down immediately with copyright infringement. Some of them say, like, the NFL. Or TriStar Pictures. Like,
I got hit by the WE. I got hit by the WE because I was criticizing domestic violence against women in so-called professional wrestling, and the complaint came from the executive office. So I'm a little bit flattered that I may have pissed off Vince McMahon himself by showing images on Access TV and commenting on this mind control. But yeah, you're definitely right. We have to be very careful what copyrighted material. I'm the worst offender with using copyrighted music in my videos. And so I'm kind of in a mad dash pretty soon to take all my stuff off YouTube, at least back it up, because I feel really nervous.
Oh, yeah. Well, just think about this. I've got like 11,000 subscribers. Imagine if I just lost my YouTube channel all of a sudden. You know, there's well over 5,000 videos on that channel. That would take like months, like 6 solid months, I think, of nonstop uploading in order to get back.
I put up a video talking about this article that I wrote about the Miriam Carey that got shot in D.C. And the company that I exposed in my article, Alhura TV, actually put a copyright infringement on that video and had me take it down.
I remember I got a copyright infringement from the New Zealand courts. They were filming inside the foyer of the court, and they tell us to put away the cameras and what have you. We were just kind of like showing the cops that they can't boss us around inside the courthouse. It was quite interesting to have that complaint. You know, you're not allowed to report on the courts, okay? A court of record is not allowed to be recorded. Turn it off! Take it off YouTube! We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, everybody, to the show that's about uncomfortable silences. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. Ah, you see what I did there? You see what I did? my very special guests, that's a plural, by the way, is Alex Ansari from Outside the Box, Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism, and now Baran Hise from WTFRLY.com. Baran, welcome to the program.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
We're just having a little roundtable discussion here about Christmas and how being a conspiracy theorist is like about as bad as being a black South African during the 80s. You know, it's quite it's a festival out there. And what are you getting up to this holiday season, Brian?
I don't really celebrate Christmas anymore. I'm among the class that, you know, it's really not economically responsible to celebrate Christmas in the traditional American fashion of buying presents for people that don't really need them or deserve them, etc.
So you don't, like, at least knit some socks for somebody?
I didn't say I don't give any presents, but you know that whole feeling where people are pressured to give gifts for a lot of people that they don't even talk to, for example.
Yeah.
You know, the corporatism of it in that sense. I don't want to get too far off into that, but, you know, I kind of draw a bright line at people that I talk to, basically.
Hey, you said you don't want to get too far off into it. I'd actually like you to encourage you to continue, because that's a very important part of Christmas now, isn't it? How do you celebrate?
That is Christmas.
Yeah,
there is no more like Christmas. If you walked up to, you know, if you did one of these Mark Dice videos where he asks, you know, fools on the streets what they think about a certain thing and ask them to relay the importance of Christmas, I would say that 1 in 4 would get it marginally right, you know, in terms of the Bible and other things like that. And beyond that, it's not really worth it.
Yeah. I actually kind of almost cracked up laughing there when you're talking about Mark Dice interviewing these fools in the streets.
I mean, seriously, you could see it happening like that. That should be his next video or one of them coming up. And I hope that he just, you know, takes that and runs with it, because it would be hilarious to just expose. I mean, all it is naked capitalism. And, you know, it is actually kind of important from a dollars and cents standpoint, because, you know, Black Friday is basically the day that retailers, you know, are excited to start heading back towards the black, towards, you know, even profitability for the year. And, you know, the funny thing about it was that this whole corporate cycle eats itself, you know, because I study the economy, you know, day in and day out. And what's noticed this year is that it's the same way that the mainstream media will catch up with alternative media in terms of embracing certain known facts. It takes months, maybe even years, for certain things to, like I said, be embraced. But the same thing kind of happens in financial news. And this year, one of the things that's embraced is that all the stores that were that forced employees into work on Thanksgiving Day or the evening of Thanksgiving, a lot of the sales that they would have gotten on Black Friday just came on Thursday night, and, you know, all it did was it pulled forward sales. It didn't create new sales, and, you know, that's kind of the idea, is that, so, you know, some of the stores even decided to not open after their competition opened, because they knew that basically they would barely cover their operating costs even if they just opened on Thursday night. And, you know, that's kind of like that right there is the line, the absolute, you know, maximum profitability that you can squeeze out of that one trick, you know, literally to keep, you know, keep up with the ever expanding need for growth, which is, you know, what Wall Street demands. And I think that's just really funny this year that it's finally actually making a point that, okay, this is about as far as we can push the ridiculous corporate nature of Christmas.
You know, I think it actually can be pushed much further. Right, think about this. Here's what's happening. Can I finish?
Just in that one limited fashion, it's like that's a lesson that is basically being cemented at this point. Like, that, you know what I mean? Like one of those things where that's an angle where it's okay. Thanksgiving night may be too far for stores to open. Thanksgiving morning, it's still, you know, right on the American line of distasteful and unethical, but we're going to do it anyway because it's going to make money. But Thanksgiving night, that's out of the question. Now, that seems to be the path going forward.
Yeah, Christmas is just a big marketing tool now, because I found in New Zealand, they start advertising Christmas and playing Christmas music in the shops in, like, late October, early November, yeah, to get
people...
They
do it here, too. I think you and I joked about that when Halloween came around. I was like, just wait, they're going to start playing the Christmas music.
Suzanne, Alex, you've been kind of silent there.
Did you know that they pump the smell of fresh-baked bread outside of a grocery store, because they've done studies to show that you're more likely to buy more food if you smell freshly baked bread?
That's a good scheme. I do get real hungry when I smell freshly baked bread.
The Velociraptor, he would wonder if it's GMO bread, isn't that like spreading air pollution?
Wouldn't that be wouldn't that be like the Velociraptor, you know, the little raptor with the little claw under his chin?
That's who I'm talking about.
The Velociraptor.
He's a philosopher, and he's a raptor.
What did I say? Did I say Velociraptor? Yeah, the Velociraptor. He's...
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't know he had a name.
That's one of the best memes ever.
It really is.
It's one of the best memes ever.
Oh, and right along with the meme of Raptor Jesus.
I haven't seen that one.
He went extinct for your sins.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's a new one.
He'll save your soul, and he's in your oil.
Oh, God. He'll run your car and save your life.
Yeah. He knows about all the poor and distraught, and he teaches lessons that have never been taught. It's Raptor Jesus.
Oh, so he knows if you need an oil change, and he knows if your shocks are good or bad.
Right.
And he sees you when you're sleeping, because he's going to attack you when you're awake and eat you.
Oh, wait, guys, I forgot to mention this. They have, Microsoft is creating the smart bra.
Oh, God.
Okay. I've got to get my hands on that.
Wait a minute, hold on. It measures mood, so it'll tell the woman via her smartphone that she's, you know, maybe getting close to that time of the month. And it helps her to lose weight by sending alerts to her smartphone when she's making bad food choices.
This is disgusting.
I don't know. I think I read something about how they're going to be able to spy and figure out what's on your computer without even the internet, just using the airwaves themselves. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. This is truly terrifying. I'm just like, wait a minute. You mean I just can't turn off my airport and you're going to be able to get in?
Well, I don't want my bra to yell at me because I'm eating a sandwich.
or like, if you're upset or something like that, your bra pops up. Wench, you on the rag, okay? Calm down!
The Fortune 500 is pushing for their own destruction. They're accelerating it, in fact, because people are going to get fed up and you know, come with pitchforks to headquarters and... You know, have conversations.
Well, people will only get fed up when they stop getting fed by McDonald's.
That's true.
The ultimate nightmare. People will get so fed up with Wall Street that they start begging China and Russia to lead the New World Order. I think we're seeing a little bit of that now. So
that's already happened. Like, yeah. China is is not one... In the same way that America is co-opted, China's co-opted. It's not... You know, right. It's not like some mysterious dragon, you know,
it's all very much connected, you're right.
Right.
Yeah, but except what they'd do is they'd use the Chinese and the Russians to suppress the Americans, and the Americans to suppress the Chinese and Russians, and deploy countries of each side overseas.
Exactly.
Because that way, it's much easier to suppress a people if you don't speak the same language and if you don't have a commonality with them, you know? If you're a US soldier on the streets of America, and you're asked to shoot, you know, a crying mother or something like that, you know, you'll think twice about it. But if it's just somebody else from another country and you're just there on tour, hey, you'll shoot one. Shoot 100 of them. Yeah, who cares?
I don't bring anything far into American soil.
Well, you know what that reminds me of? There's something going on right now in Taos, New Mexico. I just came back from Taos, New Mexico. I'm back in Trinidad. There was a protest taking place full of all of these people that are converging outside the New Mexico State Police Office. And they are upset that a police officer was fired for shooting at an unarmed woman and her five children as she fled a stop. And this is a national story right now. Well, the protesters are upset, most of them Hispanic. They're upset that this officer was fired. And I'm thinking maybe there's some sort of entitlement welfare mentality here. Here they came. They thought that they were going to be cops and everything was going to be fine, and there wasn't going to be any accountability, and somebody gets fired. There's police accountability. We should be celebrating. And they're about to riot. Not literally, but they're really, really upset. They're really, really, really offended that the managers in charge of the New Mexico State Police, the supervisors, that they're not okay with that officer shooting at an unarmed woman. So I'm shocked that there's a protest against this. But again, I think it's mostly family of police and police themselves that are protesting. I don't think it's the average person that's protesting. And so when I look at that, I see people with an entitlement welfare mentality, that they can get a job as a cop, do whatever they want, and not
that sounds like the Republican brown shoe loafer crowd that's protesting.
Yeah, well, if you watch the videos, they look like regular people. But yeah, I think you're right. And it's
sad. Not to left-right it, but, you know, like, given the dynamics of it, that sounds like the old crowd that makes excuses for law and order regardless of, you know, the circumstances, because that exists in every form.
Yeah, they pursue law and order without regard to its cost, including the cost of everybody's freedom. To not get shot at when you're not actually harming anybody?
Well, that's kind of why I you know, went at it with the left-right thing in that sense. And really it's because it's not even a left-right thing. It's a class issue. There's a certain class of people that, you know, really regardless of color in America, and I think that this gets lost. Like, you know, that if you don't, if you're in a certain class, you don't get violated by the police, or that's the idea. And, you know, they don't understand until it actually happens to them that they're not really protected from that to a large degree or as big a degree as they think. And because of that, they kind of stick up for, you know, law and order by default or the police force by default, you know, and think that, oh, that guy must have been doing something to deserve the persecution, you know, no matter who it is.
I think when we talk about persecution, what people don't realize is what it's like to be the one suffering the persecution, you know?
Right.
It makes you really angry. And, you know, it becomes almost understandable that truthers start to get really, really angry with people and call them slaves and yell and scream at their family and that kind of thing. It's almost understandable because of the frustration that you get from not being taken seriously by those closest to you, you know? And that's a kind of deep, hurtful, cutting thing that I don't think a Christmas with your family solves in most cases, you know?
You know, I talk to a lot of people about that, you know, on Facebook, that, you know, a lot of random people that, you know, we come across in the course of, you know, spreading information that, you know, are more engaged than the average person. And, you know, people, you know, what I find, because I'm an admin on different Facebook pages also, what I find is that people that are just kind of coming into the information, everybody has to go through that cycle where they sort of bypass the family and friend aspect because, you know, they'll try it and realize that, you know, certain, you know, distributions of people will just not take to it and don't care and, or, you know, just don't want to be bothered. So, you know, ultimately people have to get past that sort of mental block and realize that if you're going to, you know, whatever this information means to you, you have to understand that it's not going to mean that to other people, and it's something that you have to just ignore.
Right, that's really an important point. I try to use discretion, and I try to, I want to become a better person as the days go on in my own life. And part of that means not reacting in a negative way when I see something posted that I don't like. And I'm not proud of everything that I've done, but I really try to use restraint now and go, okay, that's where they're at. And I definitely don't follow this paradigm of, oh, that person's a shill because they don't agree with me. That type of psychosis right now is running so rampant, and I don't see any end to it. So I guess we as independent journalists, we have to use discretion and not let people pull us into their crazy web, because there are some serious crazy webs out there on Facebook.
Oh, there's some trolls to be sure. You know, the trolls from the Lord of the Rings, it's sort of a great idea, you know, pop a little American hat on them and an American suit that says, the troll army needs you. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the troll army does need you, and there are many places to participate in the web of life. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. My very special guests are Baran Hines from WTFRLY.com, Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com, and Alex Ansari, Outside the Box TV, and a nice little Christmas roundtable. Now, Baran, you did an article about Building 7 or something you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I left it for you in the chat there if you wanted to review it or if you want to just talk about it now, I guess. Basically, some new information had been finally put together, and you know, with Building 7 and 9/11 in general, there's not a lot of new information that comes out that's really groundbreaking. It's just more so more people coming to the realization and, you know, willing to actually, you know, put that out publicly in terms of, you know, like new architects and engineers, whatever, whoever decides to comment on that. But in this case, somebody made a FOIA request to NIST for some documents, and this was back in January 2012. A guy by the name of David Cole went through these documents that got released, and they were construction drawings. They were the original construction drawings for the Trade Center site and for Building 7. And when they were going through them, what they were looking for was how NIST came up with the structural construction of the or the layout of the steel structure when they were analyzing the fire and the failure of Building 7 that they basically just, you know, kind of guessed at, because most people don't really understand what NIST did with the report on Building 7. There was no real investigation of it. It was basically just a hypothetical reconstruction of the building and the simulation of fires in the building based on, you know, certain points that they said in the beginning, and it was really poor simulation at that. So, you know, if you were, you know, what I'm trying to say is that it was forensically unscientific, and it was just kind of an estimation to cover up the fact that Building 7 wasn't in the 9/11 Commission report. So what ended up happening was the people that were assigned to work on the Building 7 report, basically, it was very compartmentalized, and a lot of people were given individual sections of the report to work up, and then they were pieced together at the end, and kind of stitched together with, you know, the supporting documents and things like that. So what ended up happening was the report was put together, and everyone's name basically was attached to it, and it wasn't really that everyone was involved in the whole report. It was that it was basically signed. A lot of people were kind of sandbagged. It's like you contributed one piece to it, and then you're responsible for everyone else's work in that sense. And in that, they basically, in the compartmentalization is where a lot of the lies on the Building 7 collapse were basically allowed to, you know, come to rest, kind of. So this is basically a smoking gun in the sense that, and it seems really, really sneaky the more and more that I learn about this, because I put this article together over the course of about 2 weeks back in November, and, you know, since then, I actually talked to the guy, David Cole, who found the original flaw that I'm going to explain, but, you know, they're still constantly coming up with new information, and, you know, it just requires people to kind of lean on that, or to spread the information in that sense. So, you know, what was discovered, basically, David Cole goes through the construction drawings for Building 7 that were released from this FOIA request, and what he finds is that the pancake theory, the immediate collapse of Building 7 was basically blamed on the structural failure at a key column, which was column 79, between the 12th and 13th floors. And that started basically a chain reaction, which caused the building to supposedly come down in what they admitted to be basically free fall collapse initially. And when you look at what they've done at this length, there's two screenshots. One, which is the actual screenshot of that connection at column 79 in the report. So this is basically where the collapse of Building 7 started at, in their explanation from these fire simulations that they actually put out in the official reports. And what was found was that there's basically a piece of common steel work that was missing from the representation of the column that NIST put together. So NIST basically supposedly went through the drawings and analyzed the building construction and put together a computer simulation of it, but they left out this one little piece that most people wouldn't even notice was there unless they actually went back and looked at the construction drawings, or if they were actually a steel worker of some kind, or an architect maybe, or an engineer. And if you go to this article there, you can just go to, if you're listening on the radio, you can just go to WTFROY.com/911truth. And it's in there. You'll know it right away. It says, did NIST fraudulently omit a key component related to the collapse theory? But this piece that they left out, it basically is a piece that a square plate that's about 3/4 inches thick, I want to say. I need to look at the dimensions here because I don't know it exactly. But the it's 3/4 inch thick, and it's basically a square plate that is welded onto a traditional I-beam. So if you're thinking about a steel beam and you're looking at it from the, like if you're looking down the beam so it looks like an eye, it's basically a square plate that is welded onto the beam itself, typically at the end. In this case, it's welded on at the end where the eye part is the thicker flange of the steel beam, and the web, which is the actual tall vertical section, the block is welded in between there, basically. So it's welded to the bottom and to the vertical section. So the idea would be that as if any part of that beam were to slide, the weight wouldn't basically break the bottom flange of the beam, to be very crude about it. But so what NIST basically came up with is that the floors were supported by these horizontal beams, and this particular connection is where the beam was sitting on a steel plate, which is called the bearing plate, which is basically a seat. So and they secure it with shear studs, and then it's supported by different pieces of steelwork, basically. So the idea that NIST came up with for the collapse theory was that this beam basically slid horizontally one direction because of the mythical fires in the building, that got so hot that it distorted the steel framework. And this beam supposedly slid horizontally, they said, about 5.5 inches initially, horizontally. And because of that, it slid off of the bearing seat, and that initiated the sudden collapse of the building. So what was found, what this David Cole person found, and the other people, he was working with AE-911, and the people over there, they put this all together, and they found that basically in these construction drawings that were basically hidden, in the report, this is where it gets really sneaky. It's very complicated, but the article kind of the article lays it out in a linear fashion so that you can understand, one, what they did, and two, how they cover it up. But where it appears to be, someone basically omitted this particular steel plate from the actual consideration in the report, or more so, if you read the final report on Building 7 now, it doesn't reference anything about that plate and the particular figure. It's in Chapter 8 of the report. They went so far as to even leave that particular component out of the representation of the drawing in the report. So if you look at the report now, you would never know that that component is called for in the construction drawing as it is now.
Yep, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And I have a barrage of very special guests, including one named, incidentally, Baran. And our new guest that is joining us for this hour is Karen Quinn Tosado from UnitedWeStrike.com. Karen, welcome.
Thank you, Vinny. It's nice to be here. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, ho, ho, yes. And say hello to our other special guests, Suzanne Posel. Suzanne, welcome.
Hello. Hi. Hello, Karen.
Yes. And Baran Hines.
Hello.
Hi, Baran.
And Alex Ansari.
Hello, Karen.
Okay. Well, that's nice. The round table just keeps on growing, you know, kind of like Steeler's wheel. It just keeps on trucking. Now, Karen, this weekend we are having the United We Strike radio broadcast. How many years has this little marathon been running?
Since 2009. August of 2009. So 10, 11, 12, 13, 4, although when I first got started on this whole idea actually was December 2008. So this is kind of an anniversary, so to speak, in terms of months and years. I've been chained to this. Gosh, you never know what's going to happen once you start believing in something and you stand up and you become vocal about it. And it's interesting, you know, when I look back over the years, but I still feel the same way.
Now, this started off as the tax-free 15th, wasn't it?
Actually, it started off as taxholiday2009.net, and Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com helped me set up the original site. But the idea came from... In December 2008, we had the first banker, leave no banker behind bonus bailout stimulus package that everyone was against, and of course it passed anyway. And I was also outraged because every April 15th, you know, millions of Americans are hoodwinked and bamboozled into volunteering their tax money. And I think more people ought to know that. So, the 15th of the month just became a day for people to stand together, because one of the most difficult things in this whole movement is unity. We are so busy bickering with each other and fighting that we can't get on the same page. And this is really just an idea about people empowering themselves. I never set out to be like the leader. I set out to see how many people felt like I did, who understood fully that we have been ripped off, lied to since before birth, turned into corporations and profit-making machines, and now profit is allowed to reign. You know, we are destroying this world, and the only real job that any of us should have, in my opinion, is the joy of being good stewards of our world. And we've been trained out of that, and all of us are just being chewed up and spit out by the system. And until we recognize that we're worth more than that, you know, many of us believe we're spirit, and after we die, we'll get somewhere, we'll get to heaven, and we're living to make sure that we get to where we believe we belong. But we are also forsaking ourselves, because this three-dimensional existence is really all we know. And as much as I want to believe in heaven, I don't. You know, I recently stopped believing that Jesus existed due to speaking to Joseph Atwell and having him guest with me on my last series of programs before I stepped back from doing regular radio. And there's so much that we have been taught out of, you know. We've lost our respect. And We need to respect ourselves here. In order to feel like we can gain a paradise elsewhere, we're sacrificing our lives. And it's time, I think, to give ourselves the gift of respect this Christmas.
You were talking about something that I think is very important and bears looking upon further, is this concept of unity amid the truth movement. Now, it occurs to me that traditionally throughout history, unity is brought around by a leader. How on earth do you bring unity about to a whole bunch of people who preach and make a point of their life by not submitting to any authority?
Well, first, it has to start within, and we have to become honorable people again. You know, we have to become the heroes of our own lives. We know when something is right and something is wrong. There's an instinctive reaction, which is our divine umbilical cord. We need to plug it in. We can be moral people, you know, do no harm. Nonviolence. If we all just stopped at the same time from being pushed over the brink, which again is also about the 15th, you know, nobody has to submit to anyone else. No one needs to be a slave. Let's take a break as humanity. Let's step back for one day and say, what the frack is going on? So much. And all we really would need to do then is agree to cooperate and become good stewards of our world for our lives, respecting ourselves enough to know that we deserve a beautiful earth. And the only reason we don't have it is because we have been propagandized and trained out of living for right here, right now, honoring whatever God it is. Let's become adults and not wait to be saved by him. Let's step up to the plate, because why would any God anyway, worth his salt, figure that, okay, I'm going to let my children trash the earth and then they're going to get paradise when they get up here because they've done such a great job. Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, seems like an abdication of sanity. Suzanne Puzzle, you're going to be leaving in this next segment, and I wanted to ask you about this whole part of this movement that we consider ourselves to be a members of, you know, the truth, the bringing about the end of the lies, the lifting of the veil, whatever label you want to call on it. It probably doesn't have a label, and there's probably many people within this alleged movement that don't like labels of any kind anyway. But when you think about it, I mean, really, really think about it, there's only two things, two words that come to mind, the reason why it is being done and the why it needs to be done. Those two words are moral obligation. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. My job, as I see it, is to bring forth as much information so that my readers and my listeners can make informed decisions. I think that a big part of the problem, as far as journalism goes, has been that journalism in the whole has been paid for, co-opted, bought, and therefore all the information that you're getting is askew, directed, part of an agenda, and you can't make an informed decision based on that information. So I have taken it upon myself to bring forth information that is holistic and unbiased. I know that, but I keep my opinion out. It's not an op-ed piece masquerading as an article, because if we're going to make good decisions on what kind of things we want to buy and where we want to live and what kind of energy sources we want to use and what kind of businesses are okay to support and ones that aren't, because even small businesses are corporations. It's not corporations that we're against. It's corporatism that we're against. So if I'm bringing good information to my listening audience and my reading audience, then they can turn around each and every day in every facet of their life, make a better decision not to participate in their own tyranny.
It would be nice if people didn't participate in their own tyranny, but unfortunately we do, and I think this stems from the fact that we've all been taught to believe that we're already free. When you don't think that you're a slave, how on earth would you ever rebel against a slave master if you're not even aware that he's there? You know what I'm saying?
Well, people instinctually know that something's not right.
And the version of it that they give us just doesn't sit well. That's why when I was 12 years old, I went on a spiritual sojourn because I couldn't adhere to the religion that was practiced in my home. And I wanted to know who was right and who is this God. And if I believe in the wrong God, am I going to piss off God for making the mistake of believing in this other God? And I think that we can apply that to when we wake up and realize that the money is fake and the social memes are fake and the indoctrination stations are what we call public schools. The vaccines don't help, they harm. GMO food, which is most of what we consume, hurts us and causes the chemicals and on and on and on. Once we realize that, then we can say, okay, when we go to the store, we can turn the label around and say, parabens in my shampoo. No, I don't want to get breast cancer, and put it back on the shelf. But if you don't know, then you can't, then you're going to pick up that product and bring it home and use it. And it's going to kill you incrementally. And you won't even think to yourself, oh, yeah, it was the Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo that I rubbed in my daughter's head, which now at 42, she has breast cancer.
Yeah. And then it comes to the pearly gates. Oh, it was the breast cancer from the shampoo that got me. It wasn't the it wasn't the canned salmon mousse after all.
We need to have outlets of genuine, real information that we can base our lives on. That is the purpose of the press, to check and balance the government and the corporations to make sure that, and expose scumbaggery. Otherwise, what are we doing?
Suzanne Pozel, ladies and gentlemen, she puts the impress in the press. Now, Alex, I also wanted to talk to you about this as well, because this is, again, Christmas time. It's a time for coming together and what have you. And there's many movements that you've been fractured and part of and critiqued over the years and what have you. Do you see an underlying thread that can be tugged that will actually get people to, shall we say, cast off their own aspirations for a moment and just come together as one?
Let me give that some thought as I thank you for bringing me on this roundtable discussion on a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. I just heard a Skype sound effect. I'm still online, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Somebody dropped there. What is it going to take to get us to put aside our own egos, our own differences? Well, we're trying to do that here. We're trying to lead by example. And I think that we promote a message that we are not competing with each other. We may have different ideas. We may have different websites. But we are, in a way, working as a collaborative. And that has nothing to do with how many likes or hits, because we're all working together on this. I'm not referring to anyone in this conversation, but there are others. There are others that have done what they have done to dominate alternative media. And we have to show those entities that they are not going to win. They are going to see people working together in this next decade in a way we have never done before. And that's why I think your show, Vinny, even though, you know, you have a wide variety of guests, but the point is you bring a lot of people together, especially through these roundtable conversations, and that is community. So there's a lot I have to add to this, but that's what I'm going to say right out of the gate. That's what I think is most important, to remember why we fight.
Mm. Well, you said you could add to it. I want to encourage you to continue then.
I see people that are lost in a psychosis, that they are in this for money. Or the problem is, and I don't want to be too opinionated, but I think we need to be on the grid and off the grid. And I went off the grid for a little bit, but that's not for everyone. But for those that are on the grid, there's enough people out there that are questioning things, that we can have our own alternative media networks for cheap, done in basements all across the world, be it New Zealand, be it Japan, be it the United States and other countries in Europe. And I foresee a time that I'd like to be a part of where we make documentary films. We were talking about China earlier. I think they're all connected in this new world order, and they're going to manufacture a third world war. I'd like to work with Chinese and Russians and see us translate information back and forth. I'd like to make a documentary as to how the British Empire went into China and got everybody hooked on drugs so they can weaken the Chinese dynasty. And then after that, they paved the way for Mao Zedong. Imagine the effect that can have. So that's just my example of what I want to do. But there are other ideas. I think that there is, even though we talk about net neutrality and internet censorship, there is this firewall breaking. And a lot of it is due to just big business. Chinese and Americans, frankly, are talking more because of this coming merger, whether we like it or not. We need to turn that into a positive. So as we see these geopolitical things, I think that we need to think outside the box of the United States, and we need to think global. We need to think, let's hook up with other translators and communicate this. At the same time, let's try to find out what they're saying on their Facebook. China has their own Facebook. I would love to know about the Chinese secret societies and Russian secret societies, because it's clear to me a lot of people think Putin may not be a very bad guy. And it's very clear to me he is right in the middle of the New World Order. And
especially
so
today.
What's going on?
He dissolved the state media over in Russia today.
I did not hear that. No. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's why we cannot turn to RT. That's why those of the real independent media should work together so people don't go to them.
Yeah, they're a bit artsy-fartsy for me. And also, there's the great firewall of China that we're now starting to break through. And I think that there must be people in China exposing scumbaggery there who are giving the globalists in their neck of the woods a great big Mao Tse-Tung lashing. And Karen Testardo, you've actually kind of pioneered this sort of international producing / radio marathon sort of thing. So it'd be interesting to hear your perspective on this as well.
Well, it's really an honor when I think about it to be part of the team, because that's, again, what it is a team. It was me finding out who feels like I do, who's had it and thinks all we have to do is quit. You know, quit this system, but do it simultaneously. You know, the bad news is we're all multinational corporate slaves, but corporations only run when you show up. And if we all drop out at the same time, it works. And so we started a marathon. Bob Tuscan was part of it. It was in August of 2009. And I had been able to, from just calling into different stations, encouraging people to go on a strike. Because, I mean, a strike is when you understand that the boss has just given you intolerable working conditions, and you can't thrive, you can't do anything but work, you're a total slave, and you have to stand together to demand something. The base.
All right, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. We were just speaking of Bob Tuscan. You know, he has a Star Wars football team called the Tuscan Raiders. You never guessed that. We'll be right back. What a wonderful world. Oh, yeah. Oh. You know, I think my generation is missing out on a lot of real awesome old school music. You know what I'm saying? That kind of iconic stuff. That stuff that should not be forgotten. You know, like the way that the Ring of Power was forgotten at the start of the first Lord of the Rings film. You know, that kind of thing. Some things are important that should never have been forgotten. And I go, I'm in New Zealand, right? And this is where we made the Lord of the Rings, literally. And it's quite fantastic how the whole world literally is mimicking that story right now. Have you noticed? In the land of Mordor, the darkness and scumbaggery abound, where there are armies of trolls and goblins and demons all bickering and fighting amongst themselves, just egging for a chance to destroy something that's good, to destroy something that is not subservient. They hate it in every single conceivable way. But there are some who resist. Some who will not be slaves to dark powers. Some who are willing to give their lives in service of freedom. And I think that's something that's actually quite awesome about being part of this movement, is that you know that everybody around you isn't willing to just take things lying down. You know? How inspirational is that? Look at the insurmountable odds that we're up against. They've got troll armies online. They have troll armies. I'm not kidding. It's unbelievable. It's ridiculous. You're completely outnumbered. And yet, we're fighting them off. That's what's awesome. If you've got good on your side, If you've got truth on your side, you have far more strength than the ordinary person who is just full of crap and doesn't even believe in what they're spouting. So, today with me I have Karen Quinn Testardo from UnitedWeStrike.com, Baran Hines from WTFRLY.com, and Alex Ansari from Outside the Box TV. Now, Baran, I was going to kind of take a test on you here, and I was wondering, is there a source of inspiration for you that makes you keep getting on and exposing scumbaggery? Are you even there, Baran?
I'm still here. The same thing, we all hate it in many forms.
Okay, yeah, I think actually hating something is good motivation sometimes. Wouldn't you agree?
I don't get mad at a lot of things anymore. I just work harder at certain things. And that, you know, when you focus that negative energy, you know, people, like I said, they go through stages. It's, I forget what documentary it was, but it's described as a grieving process in a way, and it is. It's we're similar to that, you know, like the old mentality that you had, things that you were taught is dead in a sense, and you know, a person comes to grips with that, and other people aren't on board with that, like you were talking about with your family, and then ultimately you get to a point where you're going to, you're going to have to make certain decisions and find a healthy outlet, something to,
something to blow off steam, like a blunt, right, or a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Well, I mean, however people deal with that, you know, it has to be something that is sustainable in the sense that it's not going to kill you and it's not illegal or it's, or whatever, you know what I mean? So, I mean, there's no, you have to find whatever works for you. And, you know, I mean, it can be as simple as planting a garden. You could work out a lot. You could whatever. Something that will make you feel better about knowing what you know, and you can actually make some kind of a difference. You know, as opposed to ranting on the internet and arguing with people and then getting mad about it and complaining about it to your friends on Facebook. There's a lot of people that create a lot of problems for themselves and create a lot of headaches for themselves. And, you know, that's because they don't understand exactly what they're dealing with and, you know, how to deal with their own emotions, really. And, you know, for better or worse, I think that's something that people would do well to learn. And that's a difficult thing that you can't really tell a lot of people, you know, so.
Yeah, it's like they say in The Matrix, you know, up above the doorway in the Oracle's house, know thyself.
Right.
Actually, gets really important about that. Now, switching subject a little bit here. When we talk about these kind of moments of inspiration, what I find is you get creative solutions going. All right, dig this for example. We just had a Minister of Parliament, Russell Norman. He's the head of the Green Party here, right? He said, question one to the Minister for Social Development today, will she set specific targets for reducing child poverty? If so, what child poverty measures will she use? And I think about this, what kind of things do they do when they talk about child poverty? Well, they give them money, don't they? You know, there's a program here, a program there, or whatever, or maybe some extra money to those on welfare or something of that nature so that they can feed their kids. That's all well and good. But here's a creative solution that comes from inspiration as opposed to a money-spending solution that comes from dependency. How about teaching kids to grow their own food at school and teach them to teach their parents? That'll both reduce the household food expenditure and reduce the incidence of disease through simple nutrition, rather than a poverty handout, which just keeps people dependent on the state. It's better to be independent and self-reliant. And that's a lesson that goes across almost all fields. You have a look at what the government's doing, and then you have a look what the actual solution would be. Probably the opposite.
You know, Vinny, I think that these people with the charities and all the rest of it. I mean, it's so much bull crap because they want to get together and have meetings to have inspiration, and what they need is some frackin' perspiration. It's like, roll up your sleeves, honey. Get a broom, get a hammer, get a shovel. You know, if we actually really cared about people, if we were a moral people, poverty would not exist. In my opinion, we are still, unfortunately, in the dark ages. And recently, when we've, I mean, we are the military arm. The United States is the military arm of the New World Order, and it's really time to face the unfortunate music, which is a death song for countries who do not have central banking. You know, if you are the wrong color and you're not in debt through usury, we're going to put you there. If you happen to be in the Philippines and you don't like what we say and you don't want to have us expand the United States, expand military presence in your area, oh, sorry, here's a very conveniently located typhoon. And here's another one. And let's triple down this time and see just how much death and destruction we can cause and pretend that we're not even going to look at HAARP and weather manipulation when the United States government can say that they want to own the weather by 2025. How can we even believe that they're not working on us right now? They made it rain on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We've got to face the fact that we have been all bamboozled and tricked into working against ourselves. And we need to connect with the land, which so badly needs us. Here in Oregon, I am part of a local farmer's market, and we've been up here since 2008, and we're only at 700 or 800 feet. Well, the snow hit the fan, and I mean, it hit the fan big time on Friday, and we're 30 miles out of town, about 30 minutes, and driving home Friday night was something. It was just coming down. And then going back in, I mean, it was like 4 degrees, 9 degrees, and it is cold up here. It is unusually cold. And the clouds as well this time looked brown. Brown. The whole, it wasn't the gray, healthy snow. It was a weird brownish, chemicalish look to me. And now we hear about freezing fog. And today I read on the news report that also we've got bad air, because they're saying that it's so cold that all of the chemicals are trapped closer to the ground, and so it's hard to breathe. And then we also have people on the news telling us that, you know, geoengineering isn't doing anything to our land. And we're just in a crazy world. And the biggest thing that, in my opinion, we need to do is cop to the fact that we've all been had, and it's time to reboot the system, just like you do with a computer. There are so many useless jobs out there that people hate. And look at Wall Street. Come on. They gamble on people's lives. They manipulate the weather. They profit when farmers, when they fail. Look at all the money going into the military-industrial complex. People are starving. People are dying. And we're spending how many millions getting a drone that will kill not only, well, actually, yeah, one person. But right now we're content to wipe out 50 innocent victims. We'd rather spend our money there and pretend that some leader, someone outside of ourselves, is more capable of making a decision about morality than we are.
Now, let's imagine the world was a computer. If the computer had this many problems, you'd push the reset button, wouldn't you? But no, 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 no. They don't want to push the reset button. They just want it to keep running like this. That is not good enough. We're running out of resources. We're not running out of room. There's plenty. There's freaking room for Africa for heaps more people. But the thing is, the elite control the resources and are contaminating them so that more people can't be around without getting cancer between 1 and 2.
Exactly. And it's why if we all step back on the same day, can you imagine the power we would have? To step back from the brink at the same day and say, no, no more. I'm not going to be complicit. I'm not going to go to sleep tonight with blood on my hands because they stole my money through taxes because I went to the store and I bought an item where part of that money was funded into the military-industrial complex who are destroying this planet. We're ignoring Fukushima. We're ignoring the fact that starfish are melting that our sea life is dying, and that the few individuals who are sighted above water are sick and tumorous. We're ignoring all the people in the Gulf of Mexico who are still being poisoned by BP, who would rather spend money on advertising than do anything to really fix people. We have
They've turned it into the Gulf of Tanker.
They had the Gulf of Toxins.
The Gulf of Toxins! Oh, yeah, that's awesome!
So the Gulf of Toxico instead of the Gulf of Mexico.
It's, I was kind of relating it to the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
There you go, that's true.
The Gulf of Toxin.
I'm in Colorado, and there's a portion of Colorado that wanted to secede and create their own state, a 51st state. And shortly after making this announcement, what Karen was talking about reminded me of the story. They got hit with massive flooding just a few months ago. They were calling it biblical at the time that the flooding was taking place. And some of the oil fields in Colorado were flooded. Now, I haven't heard a whole lot of follow-up, but when she was talking about some of the manipulations going on, that came to mind. But I definitely agree that if we're going to do certain things, especially when we're dealing with dangerous opponents, we have to work together to show them that we're not going to be abused. And when I see certain people get attacked and things happen to them, sometimes it's because they don't have a support base or they're not visible. That's why it's important to have a community aspect nature of this alternative media that we're sharing, because if something happens to one of us, we all know about it and can do something about it. We can respond with the way that we can respond by sharing information as to what's going on.
And something Karen said earlier as well is quite great too. How much power do we have together if we stepped back and said no on one day, right? And then it occurred to me, hey, how much power do we have by ourselves saying no every day? And the answer is actually quite a bit. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Final segment coming up. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. It's the summer schedule here, so it's a midday till 2 p.m. live at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. There's a little player embedded up there. And you'll notice that we have nice summery music to take you in and out, so that all of those in the Northern Hemisphere who are getting frostbite and a thumb ripped off when they hitchhike in a blizzard can have some idea that at least there's summer somewhere on Earth.
Yeah, that was a nice break.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's summer's like a time of romance, you know. Like, I'm going to be getting married in January 18th, I think. And it's going to be really nice, you know. And I love Sarah. She's very nice, you know, especially, like, when I massage her feet, she purrs. Yeah. I thought that was quite cute. That's our cat. All right, anyway. Okay, final serious notes. This is my serious voice. One statement from each of our three guests, I think, three remaining guests. We lost Suzanne Posel earlier on, you know, shark attack victim kind of thing. You know, it happens in radio. First of all, we'd like to give the floor to Alex and Siri. Some Christmas wishes for the listeners, Alex.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's see. I don't normally do a Christmas wish, but I kind of start out with saying, you know, there's a lot of us that have become the... We live very isolated lives, many of us that are alternative media figures, and also many people that are listening in the audience, because of some of the things that we believe. Many of us are living some very isolated experiences because of the things that we speak about and because of the things that we believe. I think it's important to know that we're not alone and that we have certain things to be grateful for, not just on Thanksgiving Day, but every single day and every single moment of our lives. That we're not being tortured, that we're not seeing family members raped in front of our very eyes, that we were gifted enough to have this knowledge. To have this knowledge and actually not reincarnate into the actual war zone itself, to where we are running day and night from a drone attack like the people of Afghanistan and Pakistan this very second. We somehow were gifted with the ability to do what we're doing and live to tell the tale. Despite all this nonsense going on with Facebook censoring and YouTube censoring, the fact of the matter is we're alive and we're free. And that's more than we could say for some of the people in history that try to do exactly what we're trying to do right now. So we have a lot to be grateful for. And that's what I'll leave the audience for with as they think about this Christmas. And the other thing, do what you can do to repair what was wrong with your family, if that's possible.
And now, Suzanne, Baran, sorry. I was just trying to keep it brief. I want to let Karen Testardo kind of take us out towards the end. So if, Baran, you can give your little Christmas wish to people. What was it that you wish people would like to feel these holidays? A realization, if you will.
I think that people need to keep in mind that...
You might want to speak up there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think people need to keep in mind that this is a all the time kind of thing. Like you're living in a war, and you know most people are unaware that they're living in a war zone in America, for example. You know, it's just not a shooting war yet. And I just hope that everyone listening sort of gets the opportunity to understand that patience is necessary and that people have to find constructive ways to fill the time, because this is not going to be a short process, any of this. But that's what I wish.
Yeah, that's very cheery. And Karen Testardo, she's the den mother of UnitedWeStrike.com. What about you? Is there something that you'd like to wish for all the good boys and girls this Christmas?
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Right now the corruption is in your plain sight. So do something about it. Give yourselves the gift of freedom, of empowerment. Know within yourself you've got a divine umbilical cord. You can plug it in without an interpreter. You can be the hero of your own life if you choose to be. And understand that regardless of what God you were raised to believe in, it is time to become an adult of that religion. It is time to look beyond, to understand that history was written by the winners, and to know that individually, each one of us is worth so much more than colored pieces of metal or paper. We are under legal economic conquest. We have been bamboozled and hoodwinked into showing up every day in a poverty consciousness stricken world that only exists because we believe in it. And we believe in scarcity and poverty because we also believe in wealth and abundance on the other hand. When all of us are worthy, all of us, each and every one of us, if we believe that we go on after we die, then we have a responsibility to be accountable to Mother Earth, without whom none of us would exist, and she is being destroyed. For the first time ever, I am hearing freezing fog. I never heard that term. I'm seeing the brown clouds. There is too much going on in our water. Fukushima, the radiation. You know, we're destroying our world. But then again, Dr. Emoto proves with water, our consciousness affects our world and it affects our water. And when we stop being driven over the cliff, we can step back and begin to heal, because what better job could we possibly have than being good stewards of our world for the time we're here, respecting ourselves, stopping at the same time to agree that our lives are worthy, and all we have to do is agree to stop fighting, to cooperate, and to go back to the jobs that matter. repair and healing to demand that the military-industrial complex give us that hidden technology to heal, to not spend our money on war and death and destruction, to not have war, to have peace. And that's what I wish for all people, to understand that you're not here as an accident, but our divine umbilical cord has been hoodwinked since our birth, and it's time to reclaim it and to reclaim our power and our interpersonal relationship with the greater all that is, regardless of what we call it. So may we have peace. Please tune in to the marathon this coming Saturday. And let's begin to step back together every 15th until finally, when enough of us step back, we can all quit at the same time and begin to rebuild our lives and demand peace, and that all of our troops come home to help rebuild, hold those accountable who brought us here, and live in communities that we can barter and work together with.
And the marathon is at UnitedWeStrike.com, and that's on this weekend. Is it on Saturday or Sunday, Karen?
Saturday. It's always the second Saturday of every month where it's live, with the exception of some segments that are pre-recorded, but we have no commercials. And we really were the first that I've heard who had international producers and would hand the program over from Germany with Detlef at wakenews.net to, you know, Alan in Ireland at oymireland.com, and then Gary, who takes it on. And the whole goal is to get people just to agree to volunteer their time. David Icke has collected millions of dollars. We've done it just individually, because, and all we need to expand it is just people to donate their time, to believe in the message of connecting people around the world, because we face the same issues and the same foe. We just need to unite, quit, and begin again.
Yeah, begin again, just like Michael Finnegan. Thank you very much, Karen Quintestado from UnitedWeStrike.com, Baran Hines from WTFRLY.com, Alex Ansari, Outside the Box TV, and the no longer connected Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and RealGuerrillaMedia.com. I'm Vinny Eastwood from TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. There's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. And, of course, this is a 100% donation-driven broadcast, so if you want me to have a good time at Christmas, like $100 for gas or something like that, so I can go up and see my family, there is a donate and a subscribe button on the homepage.